In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah, 29 after 5 o'clock. Time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us. Hello there, Alan.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks. How's your Monday? How was your weekend?
Monday's good. It was a good weekend. We had a pretty good Halloween experience out this way, which was nice.
I saw your pictures. The house looked great. You had the candy shoot. It was pretty awesome.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I, and it's like I made no secret of the fact that I didn't necessarily think, certainly the big sort of Halloween events were necessarily a good idea, especially given current circumstances. But I also acknowledge that I'm not a 9-year-old kid, and so all I'm thinking about is candy. If I'm that, and so it's like I know the kids are going to be out. Like that's just a reality. And we we always love celebrating Halloween here, and so Sheridan and I made a decision pretty early on where it was like, okay, so we're going to do this, and we're going to make sure that there's no. Like we're gonna keep it as safe as possible. So we got 10 feet of PVC pipe. We stayed on the porch. Kids stayed on the sidewalk, and we just we shot some candy bars down the chute. And honestly, like the kids were so delighted by it. Like I may not go back. Like regardless of whether of how the situation changes, because it was really something to see these little kids just squeal with joy. When that Hershey bar just came shooting out the end of that pipe.
Oh yeah, my neighbor Oliver had a candy shoot, and I didn't even need to do anything because all the kids were over there across the street watching that magic. I had what you saw on Facebook. I had to resort to doing the old House of David Popowski flip to get any kind of attention at all from trick or treaters.
Well, I'll tell you though, I think that whole maneuver was executed well from beginning to end. Like I thought. From the throw to the catch to all of it. It looked like everybody was really on the same page.
Yeah, by the way, on the receiving end of that was Amy Rader's son.
I had a hunch. I didn't recognize the kid so much, but I think, Eric has a pretty distinct shape.
Yes, yeah. By the way, great question for David Roth. I'm glad we were able to get that in.
Oh, man, because I've seen the picture a couple of times because he floats it out there on social media every once in a while. But as soon as I saw that they were doing a T-shirt, I'm like, oh, well, that's just fantastic. I've actually gone back and forth myself as to whether or not I'm going to buy one. It seems like a bridge too far, but we'll see how I'm feeling once I've been inside and isolated for 2 months come, like, January.
Right.
I might be making all kinds of bad decisions.
So, really, the gross gas is going to seem like a good thing at that point.
Right.
Let's talk movies, Mr. Adams. What did you see?
Well, we've got it's not nearly the weekend that we had last time around. I've only got a couple here to talk to you about, but we'll start with we got a couple of Netflix offerings. Let's start with there's this movie called Holidate, and it's Holidate, so Holidate. Rich, stop me if you heard this one. Netflix is pretty much the only outfit that makes rom-coms anymore.
Yeah.
The death of the romantic comedy has been bemoaned for ages, and we certainly haven't seen a lot of them coming out of the major studios in recent years. But Netflix never met a niche market they didn't want to corner. And so they detected that market inefficiency and started churning out the romantic comedies. And, these vary in overall quality. So they all do share that unmistakable sort of Netflix sheen. The fact that there's so many of them certainly indicates that they're being watched and watched a lot. This latest one, Holidate, directed by John Whitesell, script by Tiffany Paulson. It's very typical of the genre. It's genial, low stakes, revolving around the sort of, absurd on its face high concept that marks a lot of these sort of Netflix rom-coms. Basically, it's about two people who who are looking for someone to share the holidays with without any of, you know, the other stuff. It's, you know, it's charming enough, definitely formulaic, but, you know, this isn't the kind of movie you watch if you're looking to be surprised in any way at all. The truth is there's comfort to familiarity, especially these days. And so sometimes it's kind of soothing to know what you're getting. The basic gist, you've got a woman named Sloan, played by Emma Roberts. She's single, sick of the stigma that comes with that. And she's got a family that's always hassling her about settling down. Her mom, Elaine, played by Frances Fisher. Her sister, Abby, played by Jessica Capshaw. They're sort of the foremost among her detractors. And everyone's about on her, you know, get married, you know, settle down. And all she wants is to get people to leave her alone about it. And that's when her Aunt Susan, played delightfully and way on brand by Kristen Chenoweth, who introduces her to the notion of the holidate. And basically, the holidate is a person that you go out with on a holiday, but that you aren't actually dating. So there's no pressure and there's no expectation.
Okay.
Now Sloan's initially skeptical, but then she meets Australian golf pro Jackson, played by Luke Bracey, and she's like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. Jackson's similarly disillusioned with relationships, so he agrees, and then the two become holidates. They go out and have fun on these assorted holidays without any of the hang-ups and issues associated with relationships. And Rich, I know this is going to be a shock to you. This leads to some problems.
Oh, who saw that coming?
Right, because they spend more time together, they enjoy one another more and more, and it's a wonderful montage where we just sort of work through the big holidays, like the New Year's Eve and the Valentine's Days, but we also get, like, St. Patrick's Day, Cinco de Mayo, like, these sorts of things. So they're starting to dig each other, but, you know, they have this holidays-only agreement, and, you know, with the lack of expectations and hang-ups and whatnot, there's also a distinct lack of communication. And so you have to wonder if they're going to allow their own fundamental unhappiness to keep them from finding, you know, that true connection. Look, man, like, as soon as I told you the name of this movie, you pretty much knew what the deal was.
Oh, yes.
Like, I mean, it's very simple. But again, that predictability, there's something kind of nice about it. It's very soothing. Particularly when you're talking about a romantic comedy that is also a holiday movie. There's something to be said for having a fundamental understanding of how the whole thing's going to go after watching for 5 minutes. And that kind of paint-by-numbers plot mechanic situation, for movies like this, it's a feature, not a bug. Like, that's what these Netflix movies tend to be all about. And again, I don't mean to indicate that I had a bad time. Like, I'm a sucker for rom-coms, so, you know, like, I love a good meet-cute and all that stuff. So I'm an easy audience. But this was okay. Like, it's not great, but it's okay. And with stuff like this, okay is more than good enough.
Yeah.
Like, Roberts and Bracey are fine together. Like, they've got some good chemistry. It's not the most sizzling you'll ever see, but they click well enough. They're having fun. All rom-coms succeed on largely... The ceiling is set by your central pairing. And this movie basically lives up to the solid B potential of the lead couple. So, yeah, Holiday. It's not a great movie, but it's far from the worst you'll see.
All right. There you go. And what was the other one that you got to view?
Okay, so I saw, like, I didn't know, I'd never really heard of this movie before I came across it this weekend. It's a movie called His House, and it's on Netflix. Yeah, it's the sort of movie that gets me to thinking. Have you heard? It's a turn of phrase that's been floating around for a few years. The phrase elevated horror.
Yes.
It's basically a term that's used to describe movies that incorporate horror elements while ostensibly being sort of above the whole genre aspect of it. It's a phrase I don't care for because the films that get tagged with it, you know, and the films of the filmmakers, your Ari Asters and your Jordan Peels and your Robert Eggers, like, they don't need qualifiers. It's the fact, the notion that a horror movie is somehow less than really bothers me, because I've spent my life watching, you know, high quality artistically fulfilling horror. Now, granted, like, there's a lot of schlock out there. I'm not saying all horror movies deserve to be treated with the same, you know, same artistic, you know, sensibility. But there are a lot of really thoughtful horror movies out there, and there have been for decades. So it's basically just a snobby way for fancier pants film critics than myself to feel good about liking horror movies, near as I can tell. I bring that up because this movie, His House, is definitely going to get painted with that label by somebody. It is, Rich, it's one of the best movies I've seen in ages.
Wow.
It's written and directed by a debut feature filmmaker, a guy named Remy Weeks. It is a movie that brings together some really well-executed scares with some really sharp, incisive social commentary. It succeeds on its own merits. It doesn't need that sort of label. It's basically a haunted house horror thriller that's packed with like really unsettling images. It's to great scares, but it's also this wonderfully sharp sort of deconstructive commentary on the nature of the refugee experience, and it's incredibly effective from both perspectives. Honestly, it borders on brilliant. Good movie is like it marries those genre trappings with nuanced messaging surrounding a really complex issue, and it does it really well. The basic gist is you've got this couple, Ball and Rial, played by Sook Dorisu and Wunmi Musaku, respectively. They're fleeing South Sudan. They're refugees fleeing the violence in that country with their daughter in tow. And the movie opens with we see them like sort of towards the tail end of that journey, but in the process of they're crossing the Mediterranean in this overcrowded raft, there's an accident, and many of the people on board are lost at sea, and Bol and Rial's daughter is among those people who are lost. So that's how the movie opens. They spend some time in detention before being processed and granted probational asylum in London. They're delivered to this sort of rundown house at the outskirts of town where they meet their caseworker, a guy named Mark, played by Matt Smith, who I didn't check, but I'm pretty sure he was a Doctor Who. But he helps them move in. It's a rundown and kind of grimy place, but it's theirs. So Ball immediately tries to assimilate. He's getting out into the community, changing the way he dresses and behaves. He tries to get Rial to join him in doing so, but they both kind of struggle. Like they're having difficulty connecting with their new surroundings, and they're also like sort of there's this sort of ring of suspicion. Like you know, so many people from the you know from the town and the neighborhood, you know, don't trust them because they're refugees. So they have this sort of they're disoriented and they're discomfited and all that. But then. Things start to get weird, like, in their house. Like, they start seeing things. Like, hearing noises and having, like, strange visions. And neither's really sure what they're experiencing, but something's really wrong. Rial is the one who first realizes what's happening. She recognizes it as sort of an evil presence. It's a creature known in their culture as an apeth, or it's a night witch is the translation. And it's this monstrous creature that has great power, and it wants something. At that point, we learn about Rial makes mention of a debt that is owed and must be repaid, but it's never really made clear what that debt is. Bol, on the other hand, thinks it's he still thinks it's supernatural, but it's more of a more conventional sort of curse. So the days pass, and the sinister happenings grow in frequency and intensity. And they have to decide how much they're willing to endure and how far they're willing to go to keep one another safe in the face of what's ultimately a largely unknown evil. Rich, it's just a remarkable feat of filmmaking. Like it manages to be both a fantastic, like straight up haunted house movie, and a really effective exploration of like the othering that comes from the refugee experience. And I mean, there are plenty of movies out there that tackle one or the other. But just the idea of executing both at this high level is just impressive as hell. Like, especially when you take into account, this is his first feature film. Like, Remy Weeks had never made a feature film before. And to make something this good, it's just shocking. I mean, he's done some shorts and a little bit of TV. And so, like, for me, and it's going to sound hyperbolic when I say it, the first sort of thought that I have, like, I don't think anyone has set this kind of horror / social commentary bar like this high their first time out? Like since Jordan Peele dropped Get Out, like that's the comparison. And I mean that's no faint praise. Like that's, you know, I still consider Get Out to be one of the best movies of the 2010s. Mm. You know, and like for someone to sort of even get into that conversation is really incredible. Like it's striking to look at. Like whether you're looking at the sort of haunted house imagery, some like some weird ghosty like spooky stuff happens, or if you're just like there with a family that's like been walking for weeks to try and escape real life horrors of a war torn homeland, like the horrors, whether they're fantastical or too real, are all just they just carve themselves like indelibly into your memory. There's a really distinct visual style. Like the Weeks has a real command of tone and tension, and it's a complex narrative, but it never gets convoluted. Like it's just on and on and on. The performances are great. Like Dirisu and Musaku are both remarkable, both when they're speaking and like managing to capture, like find these moments where they're projecting these waves of feeling without a word, just using their eyes and their expressions. And it's just like, it's, I mean, there are other performances, but I mean, this is basically a two-hander and both players are like, just like holding fantastic cards. So basically it comes down to, look, man, like if someone wants to call this elevated horror, I can't stop them. But this is the kind of movie that illustrates both why the term exists and also proves it unnecessary. Because you can consume this movie solely as a pure haunted house thriller and really dig it. You can consume it primarily as an allegory for the refugee experience and the pains of assimilation and really dig it. The fact that it works both ways, I think, tells you everything you need to know about just how good it is.
Excellent.
Yeah, man, you got to check it out.
I'm looking forward to it. His House, Alan Adams, talking with us here on Downtown. Thank you, Al. We appreciate it as always, and we'll catch up with you again in a couple of days.
Yeah, we'll talk to you on Wednesday, man.
If you have any candy bars, just aim that chute toward my house.
I'll see what I can do.
Thank you, sir. Farewell. Alan Adams on Downtown. Pass the popcorn.